You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News, coming at you live from 1 a.m. as the Pacers just finished their game against the Portland Trail Blazers. A slight defeat on the scoreboard, although the game really wasn't an 8-point game. They lost by more and chipped away at it at the end. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Turner's big night and how, of course, it happens right after we talk about how bad he's struggling recently on this exact show. And then we'll look ahead at Los Angeles Clippers tonight, who the Pacers destroyed right after the trade deadline. But opening with Portland, it just happened. 106-98, the final score for those who couldn't stay up late enough to catch any or some of the game. The Pacers actually came out looking great. They were up 30 to 16 or something like that, or 28-16 or something. And the Blazers missed their first 10 threes, and then the Pacers just fell off a cliff. They scored 41 points over the next two quarters, and the Blazers got their three ball going. They made 12 of their next 18, so they were 12 for 28, which they were almost at 50% after starting 0 for 10. It was crazy how hot they got from the field. And they were up pretty big going into the fourth. Pacers had a good fourth quarter on defense, only giving up 18 themselves, but it wasn't enough after the hole they dug themselves early in the game. It didn't really matter that they had a good first quarter, because like Adam and I talked about yesterday, they've been going on these stretches where the offense just cannot do anything. Kalen Cooper's been harping on it not all season long, but for months now, that it's all about just they can't do anything against switches, and it's so brutal. So this game started with the Pacers just going pick and pop right at Nurkic every possession, and Turner was hitting, and he had some nice putbacks. He had 11 points in the first 5 minutes of the game. And the Blazers took a timeout, and then with about 6 minutes to go, they said, all right, we're going to switch now, or at least not have, we're not going to have Lillard drop so much with the ball handler, kind of hover, so Turner can't get that shot. And then when Lillard came out, they have a lot of like-sized dudes between Jake Glayman, Rodney Hood, Seth Curry, Aminu, Harkless. Like, they have a lot of, like, tiny to not huge wings, and they can switch everything, and the Pacers just had very little answer. And then Sabonis himself couldn't get anything going on. You know, the Blazers have three actual centers they can throw out at any time to soak up fouls and contact between Nurkic and Zach Collins and Enes Kanter. So Sabonis couldn't get going either. So they really struggled to create anything on the second unit. The only guy who could get going, ironically, was McDermott. He would fly around some screens and get open looks. He finished with 14 points and made four threes because it was a road game. but they just could not get anything going against these switches, and it just killed them. They had no way of scoring, and then Dame finally figured out how to put the ball in the basket. It was his first ever. Damian Lillard finished with 30 and 15, got MVP chance at the end of the game. He had his first ever 25-plus point and 15-plus assist game of his career, so he was a combination of him just being awesome. Like, obviously, you don't score 30 if you're not awesome, but 15 assists is a combo of him setting up his teammates and his teammates hitting shots because they caught fire from three. Like, to finish over 40% after missing your first 10 is just insane. And the Pacers shot well from three, too. They were 10 for 24, which for them is pretty good, but they struggled from the rest of the field. They only shot 42.7%, and they didn't get to the line enough. Only 22 free throw attempts is fine, I guess. That's more than Portland got. By the way, Portland made 90% of their free throws. They did a great job at the line in this game. So to me, it was just all about that. You know, they couldn't get good looks against these switches because they could hit their threes. They could not hit their twos because there was no way for them to generate anything. You know, I thought Thad would have a much more favorable matchup. He was 1 for 8. Bojan couldn't get in a ton of good looks. He was 6 for 13. Collison was 3 for 8. You know, they just had no. Tyreek had a good rhythm stretch there in the fourth, but before that he was 1 for 6, I believe. He finished actually with an okay game, but they just had no way of generating any offense. It was pathetic. Then finally in the fourth they figured some stuff out. They were getting some dribble penetration and making the defense collapse a little bit, and they really threw off the rhythm of the game late when they finally got some stops. The Blazers were up 100 to 88 with 5.5 minutes to go, and it fell over just given the game flow. And then the Pacers didn't let them score until like about a minute to go, but they themselves only scored 5 points in that stretch, so they weren't able to dent it enough to seriously come back. It's just another example of the team not being able to figure it out against these kind of switches. And maybe, you know, yesterday with Adam, we said, you know, they're having these stretches recently that the end of the, or excuse me, the early end of second let's start that whole sentence over. The end of the second quarter and the early third quarter against Denver, for example, fourth quarter against the New York Knicks, late third, early fourth, actually the whole fourth against the Bucks, some of the second half against Philly. Like, they're just having these huge stretches where they cannot put the ball in the basket, and maybe it is just the other team just starts switching everything. It doesn't matter who the Pacers have on the floor. The other team switches, they have no answer, that's it. So they're going to have to figure something out, because right now what's happening is they're just like, okay, a mismatch, we'll throw it in there and hope something happens, and nothing happens, and then they don't score. So they'll have to figure something better than that out, because it is not working at all. It's a complete disaster. So that the offense, I think, is the biggest problem right now. They can't keep having these down stretch. Even if it isn't switches and they're just missing a lot, they can't keep having a down stretch every game. Like, that's holding them back from winning games that they're in and winnable. But it is what it is. The Blazers are probably as good, and they were the home team. So you can't complain too much about losing this game, especially because they had the best player on the floor. And Nurkic has been really good this year. So I would have said before this game, they also had tied for the second best player on the floor, but I can't say that because the Pacers had a fantastic game for Miles Turner, which merits taking a break and talking about. So let's take a quick break and talk about Miles Turner's big game. So, of course, the day after me and Adam go off for 20 minutes about, you know, Sabonis being great and finding his rhythm after his ankle injury, he's making all these shots and being efficient again, he's hitting the glass, he's been good passing, he's been better for them, and, you know, Miles is shooting 30-whatever percent since his injury. Like, oh, man, like, we have to dig up this discussion again. And then Sabonis goes 3-for-7 with 7 points and only 7 rebounds and 4 fouls and had 4 turnovers and stinks. And Turner is getting all these pop threes and getting to the line, and he had led the team with 10 rebounds himself. He also fouled 4 times, but he was better on offense by quite a bit in this game, which is just the funniest timing to me. And I think this is like a reasonable barometer of how to attack switches is if you know they're going to switch, I think you start the possession off with the Miles Turner pick and pop because, you know, you get a guard on Turner and you can post him up. Like, at least that makes the defense panic because they have a guard guarding a center in the post. Instead of waiting until the end of the possession when the switch means that either Turner is rising up and taking a contested three, which that's what happened in crunch time, or Darren Collison's trying to beat a big off the dribble, which he is not particularly good at. I think that's been the biggest drop-off for DC this year, by the way. Like, his whole game's taken like a tick back, but his speed is way less than last year. He just can't blow by the bigs like he used to. He has to pull up almost every time. He has to do it on Nurkic a few times. But that you know, Turner can do some damage for you. And when the Blazers were not switching, he was able to get some points that way, and that's what made him have such a strong start. And 28 and 10 is what they need from him because, it gets him rolling, and I think this could lead into some confidence for him going forward. What was his big game the first time he broke out the ponytail? I'm going to go look. But I think it was similar to the stat line early December, I want to say. I hope it was. It was against the Wizards. It was the Bradley Beal block game. He had 26 and 12 before going on quite the tear. Oh, wow. This is like shockingly similar. Prior to that 26-point game, in the 5 games prior, Miles Turner shot 46% from the field, 33% from three, and averaged 11.4 per game. So a slightly better run than he had before this game tonight. But then he went off and had the ridiculous stretch basically from that until the end of December when he put up 16.7 points, 9 rebounds on 55% shooting and crazy 3-point shooting. So maybe tonight was a turning point for Turner where he can go on another stretch like that because, I mean, I know I'm just grasping at straws saying he had a similar stat line and a big jump, but he needs this, and he is a confidence kind of player. We know that from him in his whole career. Maybe this is exactly what he needs to get going and get back on track because, like me and Adam were talking about, he hasn't been putting the ball in the basket very well, and that, you know, when that's not happening, they take him off the floor and they're missing his defense more. Like, all of it blends together. And it mattered a lot in this game. They needed every ounce of his offense. Another thing regarding the big men, this isn't super related to Turner, but it comes to the front of the brain when I'm thinking about this game. So the Pacers were on a run, cutting into the lead late with about that 5-minute mark. You know, they subbed in the Turner Sabonis combo to try and, you know, get it worked for them the other night last week. And they against the Thunder, and they try to go to it again to throw the Blazers off, maybe get a nice comeback. But those two on offense isn't why they're so good. Like, they had that good stretch against the Thunder, but usually it's their defense of that too that was so good. And it was, again, to be fair, in this instance, it was good. But if you need offense, I think you gotta have Thad in the game. And they did not have Thad in the game. They could not score for a soup. When did they take Thad out? Okay, they took Thad out with 5:55 to go. And they had 88, and they hit a free throw literally like that second. So they took him out after an and one. So really they had 88, not 87. And then Thad came back in with 3:39 to go, and they still had 87. he came in for Sabonis. So that two-minute stretch right there where they couldn't score and they stopped him every time, it would have been nice to be able to put the ball in the basket and come back. And then lo and behold, they score on their next possession. So maybe I think Thad would have been a better choice than the Turbonis combo there. And Turner was playing well enough that I think he had to be in there. He got Nurkic to foul out. With some of his post play, he was doing an okay job on him. Nurkic had a pretty good game, but he did an okay job on him, and his offense was really good because Nurkic couldn't handle him. So I think you had to have Turner out there with Thad down the stretch, and they did not. I do think that Nate deserves a little bit of criticism for that because he always goes to Thad, and I think Turner Sabonis worked last week, but that's not a reason to go to it again. I know, and I just saw that he talked about playing Sabonis more minutes, but I think in clutch time, you have to stick with what you know is going to work and not what might work. And in this instance, it was glaringly obvious to me that it wasn't going to work, and then it didn't, and then the right decision was right there, and he switched to the right decision, and it helped right away. So it's a bummer because, you know, I'd be singing a whole different tune if Turner, like, obviously, duh, if it works, you talk about it differently. But you talk about, like, and this is the closing front court of the future if this works, and now it stinks it up again, and you're kind of back to the mental gymnastics of, like, all right, how could this look in the future? Now you get a little more trepid. But Turner was not the reason for that. He was very good in this game with his 28 and 10. And getting to the line 10 times is no slouch for Turner. He's not normally a good get-to-the-line guy. In fact, I want to know what his exact free throw attempt rate is, but I want to guess before I look. I'm going to go with something like 20% probably, like not very often. 24.2, okay. Lower than last year getting to the line. Oh, I'm looking. Yeah, I was right. Never mind. 24.6. I'm sorry, I can't read. Lower than the last 2 years, so getting to the line much less as he becomes more of a pop big. So getting to the line 10 times is big for him. Hopefully that's something else that he can take with him too. He needs this run, and I am rooting for it to happen. Starting tonight against the Clippers, he can make it a run after two games. So let's look at that Clippers game because they could use this back-to-back to get back on track. It could be huge. So let's look at LAC right now. What's up, guys? It's March. The tournament bracket is here, and IU is not in it. You should bet on the NIT, though, because they aren't it. But the first week, really the whole NCAA tournament, but the first weekend is easily my favorite betting weekend, literally the entire year. There's a crazy game that wins me a lot of money or loses me a lot of money every year. If you like filling out a bracket, picking your national champion, doing all the upsets, or all of it, MyBookie is the perfect place for all your March Madness fun. Zion and his teammates at Duke could win the title. I did not pick them. I picked the Tennessee Vols. So that's probably going to – they're probably going to lose to Colgate in the first round because I did that. But if you think you know who's going to win, MyBookie is the place to do it. They have something for everyone, even you, Mr. Guy with multiple brackets, which is a shot at me because I fill one out with pen and fill one out online. So I'm the multiple bracket guy. MyBookie's been in the business for forever. They pay you really quick, which is why I like them. I have problems with that at other places. But you can bet with the best. You can kick back, enjoy March Madness, roll in the cash. That's the best part. Deposit with MyBookie today and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. For a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. The Clippers, soon to be the Englewood Clippers. They will not be, I mean, I wonder actually, this is unrelated to basketball, if when they move their stadium from Staples to Englewood, if they'll be the LA Clippers still, or they'll be the Englewood Clippers. Anywho, Clippers won 7 of 8, 8 of their last 10, they're playing very well. Their only loss in that run was when they gave up 140 to Boston, and then a 111-105 to Utah, who's very good. They have been playing fantastic basketball of late. They kind of have like a cobbled together roster, but they're all quality players who fit a defined role. And Doc Rivers, you know, every other year it feels like there's an article about how he should stop coaching because he can't keep up with the game. And then the next year he's really good and is a really good coach. And this is really good coach year. He's got them way above what I expected them to be. That's for sure, especially if you're trading away Tobias Harris. So nothing but credit for Doc Rivers getting this team to be good, and especially good after trading away so many of their guys. So they just played Brooklyn. Oh, injuries first. Excuse me. I'm going out of order. I'm cheating. I believe they have Justin Bamute out. He's been out the whole season. So nothing crazy to report on the injury front for them. They have a lot of guys who seem like they're injury-prone players to me, but they are not currently hurt, so it doesn't really matter. Last game, they started Patrick Beverley, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Danilo Gallinari, Landry Shamet, and Ivica Zubac. The key takeaway there, that's three tiny kind of guards with like Shamet and Shai as your wings. Two rookie combo-ish guards who are, they're okay players. Their defense is not very good, mostly because of age. You know, they can learn and get better, but also just because of some physical tool problems there. Patrick Beverley, a fantastic defender. Which whoever he guards of the Pacers' backcourt will have the toughest game because Patrick Beverley will hound him. For example, Patrick Beverley did a great job on Paul George a few weeks ago. I bet he guards Bojan right away. And then Shai probably on Wes Matthews with Shamet on DC, but I don't really know. And then also they had Gallo and Zubac as their other two starters. Gallo has been their best player in the absence of Tobias. He's been very good this year. He had 20 points in their last game. And Zubac, he's kind of a project player, but he could be something, and I totally get why they're starting him, because Trez and Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, are a great 1-2 punch off the bench. And that is part of how the Clippers are so successful, is like the Pacers, they really, really have great depth. Their starters are small, you know, they have these three tiny little guards, but they really mix and match them with their second unit, which features Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell, Garrett Temple, Jamichael Green, and Wilson Chandler. Sprinkles of Wilson Chandler, not as much him, but mostly the first four guys. Temple, Green, Harrell, all, you know, front court players, bigger wings slash forwards and centers. Lou Williams, obviously going to be the sixth man of the year. He is a very good basketball player. He had 25 in their game against the Nets. So you have to do well against that hosh-poshy kind of three-guard lineup. And here's a big thing that matters for this game, is that group cannot switch, because you know they can get some bad matchups if Shai ends up guarding a big man or Shamet ends up guarding a big man. Patrick Beverley could probably hold his own, but they're not going to be switching as much, so you might be able to get some pops or roll actions looking good with them on the floor. I expect a lot of screens in this game, so be on the lookout for that. The Clippers do a lot well, though. They're a pretty good shooting team. They're second in the entire NBA in three-point percentage. They're almost at 39%, which is crazy. And they get to the line a ton, 29 attempts per game, first in the league. Eighth in percentage, too, so they're very, very efficient. I think their effective field, or their true shooting percentage is one of the highest numbers in the league, too, because of those two things being so good. So that's how you know, they're hard to guard because they're so efficient, and they take good shots. They don't take a ton of threes, but they make a ton of them because they take good shots. Their quality on the glass. Zubac is solid. Trez is a complete monster. Sabonis will have his hands full guarding him on the bench. They share the ball because they have all these. They're just like a quality basketball team. And they have guys who can do a little everything. You know, Gallo can guard the big wings. They have the scoring guard punch. They have Lou to come in and dominate the benches. So if the second unit can keep up with Lou, I think they can win. And if the starters can dominate the other starters, I think they can win. But for sure, one of those has to happen, because if neither of those two anecdotal things happen, the Pacers just have absolutely no chance in this basketball game. So they'll have to find a way to cobble together some stuff to win. But I actually think they can. I know it's a back-to-back, but they match up pretty well with this team, just given the size differences. So I think they have a shot. I really do. They don't have a ton of big man, you know, prowess to really down you. So one of Turner, Sabonis, or both even could have a solid game, and they need that. So I think they're going to win, actually, and I'm always wrong, so that was probably stupid to say, but I think they're going to win. Should be a good game tonight. I'll have another tired, raspy-voiced 1 a.m. podcast for you guys on Wednesday talking about it. But yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in to today's episode of Locked On Pacers. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Please leave us ratings and reviews on iTunes. We'd love to know what you guys are thinking about the show. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your Tuesday.